Welcome to The Lead, the exclusive news magazine of Northeast Texas, here on your station, 88.9 KETR. Good morning, I'm your host, Scott Harvey. This week, noted journalist and renowned speaker Dan Rather gives his thoughts on the state of journalism today, including its impact through social media.
I cover stories. I don't have time to be tweeting people 5 times an hour. Besides that, I don't think anybody's interested where I got my hamburger today at lunch. But I say that only half jokingly.
And attention all job seekers, just how much information are you willing to share through Facebook and Twitter?
I feel like I've cleaned my Facebook up enough, but you never know, like, what's on the internet. It's always on the internet. You can always find something that could hurt you on down the road.
Those topics are coming up after we check out the week's headlines. You're listening to The Lead on your station, 88.9 KETR.
You served your country. Now, the Veterans Crisis Line is here to serve you. If you're a veteran in crisis or know a veteran who is, help is available. Call the Veterans Crisis Line today at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Or chat online at www.veteranscrisisline.net. It's your call.
Hi, I'm Rick Howard.
And I'm Stan the Man Kratchman.
Your host for Big Band Stage Door Canteen, inviting you to join us each week for the finest big band music.
With notable artists such as Benny Goodman, Artie Shaw, Tommy and Jimmy Dorsey, and much, much more.
So join us for Big Band Stage Door Canteen each Monday night at 11 on your station, 88.9 KETR.
And welcome back to The Lead. It's now time to check out the headlines from this week throughout Northeast Texas. 30-year-old Clint Weldon Wilson will not face charges in the suspected murder of Justin Daniel Pollock in December. The Sulphur Springs man was no-billed by the Hopkins County Grand Jury last week, citing that self-defense applied in the case. A motorcade is planned following the arrival of fallen Wood County soldier Tanner Higgins, killed last Saturday in Afghanistan. His body will be flown into Majorsfield Municipal Airport in Greenville Monday. The Sulphur Springs ISD, from where Higgins graduated, flying flags at half-staff Friday. The Commerce Police Department has purchased a bank of tasers to give officers another option when working to gain compliance from combative persons. Each officer will undergo training before allowed to carry the device, which can temporarily incapacitate subjects up to 35 feet away. The Texas Department of Family and Protective Services has deemed a local daycare to be in compliance after an incident last week left a children's elbow dislocated. The report cites that a staff member at the Children's Learning Center in Commerce demonstrated competency when helping a child off her bicycle. No officers were injured after allegedly exchanging gunfire with 52-year-old Bobby Bryson Frierson in the Lamar County community of Chakota. Frierson was wounded in the exchange. He has been charged with aggravated assault on a public servant. The Sixth Court of Appeals in Texarkana has dismissed a petition seeking a permanent injunction of TransCanada's Keystone XL pipeline from running through Lamar County. The Crawford Family Farm Partnership has reportedly failed to respond to the court for its request for records from the case. Dr. Ron Newsom, former head of the A&M Commerce Athletic Association and voice of Tarleton State Athletics, was found dead in his Stephenville home Tuesday evening. An autopsy has been ordered. Newsom received his bachelor's, master's, and doctorate from East Texas State University. The Bland ISD has joined the Texas Taxpayer and Student Fairness Coalition, which now indicates more than 40% of districts across the state and over 1.3 million school children are impacted. On Monday, a judge set an October tentative trial date for Texas's school finance lawsuits. The four cases were consolidated. Water service was to be returned to customers Wednesday in the Hunt County community of Jacobia, where officials had been dealing with multiple leaks in the system since late Monday. Residents, however, are being asked to boil their water before consumption until further notice. One deputy was killed and a police officer injured as their patrol vehicles reportedly collided while responding to a call Thursday in southern Oklahoma. The accident along U.S. Highway 70 killed 47-year-old Choctaw County Deputy Brian Hayden of Sawyer. 29-year-old Joshua Moore of Hugo was receiving treatment at last report. The driver of the vehicle in which two Northeast Texans died in a July 2011 accident has pleaded guilty to two counts of intoxication manslaughter. 20-year-old Kiefer Wynn will be sentenced at a later date. The accident inspired the creation of the designated driver program at Dylan's Drivers in Paris. The Como Picton ISD and community members have planned a May 12th benefit for band director Jeremy Wofford, whose Royce City home was destroyed by one of the dozen of tornadoes to strike the region April 3rd. Donations to conduct the festival are sought from area businesses. A reception is planned for May 16th for retiring Sulphur Springs ISD Superintendent Patsy Bolton, who will step down after more than 43 years with the district. The Sulphur Springs ISD board has named Michael Lamb of Forney the sole finalist to fill the role. The Grayson College Board of Trustees has increased tuition by $4 per semester credit hour for in-district students and $7 for out-of-district students. Revenue from the hike will generate an estimated $363,000. In March, the Paris Junior College Board of Regents also voted to raise rates. Residents and business owners in Collin, Hunt, Kaufman, Rockwall, and Van Zandt counties are among those eligible for low-interest disaster loans. The announcement by the Small Business Administration comes following a request from Governor Rick Perry following the April 3rd tornadoes and other storms that damaged the region. And in what its dean calls the most futuristic program on campus, the A&M Commerce College of Education and Human Services is now offering an online Master of Science in Global e-learning degree. It trains for practice in public and private education, business, industry, and nonprofit organizations. That's a check of some of the news making headlines this week throughout our region. When I come back, our interview with Dan Rather from earlier this week. That's next. This is The Lead on your station, 88.9 KETR.
I'm Guy Raz, the weekend host of All Things Considered. Our show isn't simply a recap of the news. We explore different angles on the day's stories, going beyond the usual headlines. When you listen, you'll discover something you didn't know, maybe hear a perspective that might surprise you. Expect to know more every Saturday and Sunday on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Starts at 4 p.m. Weekends on your station, 88.9 KETR.
Bluegrass music that can please the ears, magnify the emotions, and penetrate the soul to stir within us our deepest being. And which, served up in tiny packets by A&M Commerce's own Railroad Bill, satisfies the never-ending longing for vocal clarity, instrumental virtuosity, and a lasting warm fuzziness. And on Sundays from 7 till 10, you're riding on the Bluegrass Special.
Welcome back to The Lead. On Tuesday, I was honored to sit down with former CBS Evening News anchor Dan Rather, who has more than 60 years of journalism experience and covered historic events such as the JFK assassination, the Civil Rights Movement, Vietnam War, and World Trade Center attack. Rather was on campus for an evening presentation entitled Hard Times Then and Now to offer perspective as a child of the Great Depression amid our current economic state. In an exclusive interview with KETR, the 80-year-old Rather addressed, among other things, the changes he's experienced and we've all experienced in journalism over the years.
We've moved well into the internet age. That I'm old enough, I was born in 1931, to have seen, not just in terms of the United States, our beloved United States of America, but in terms of the world, move from the newspaper era to the radio era to the television era, and now we've moved into the internet era. If it isn't true already, and I believe it to be true, it will soon be true, that the internet will be the dominant place for people to get news. That doesn't mean that it's going to completely erase television, radio, and newspapers. But it's the future, and in many ways, the future is now. Now, your question is how that has impacted journalism. Mm-hmm. Not just because of the internet. There have been a lot of other factors that I think American journalism is and has been for some little while now in crisis. In some ways, those of us in journalism, and I do not accept myself from this criticism, we lost our grit and our guts. We lost the sense of what American journalism at its very best is supposed to be, which is a check and balance on power, That's the reason we have the First Amendment. Somehow we strayed away from that. And I've said, not everybody has always liked it, that we need a spine transplant, mm-hmm. that we just have somehow lost our backbone of speaking truth to power, being a little bit afraid to ask the tough question and the tough follow-up question, to be somewhat in awe, somewhat intimidated by power, whether it be political power, corporate power, union power, whatever. So I think that's put us in crisis. And without question, the standards of American journalism have diminished somewhat over the last 15 or 20 years. There's been what I call the corporatization, the politicalization, and the trivialization of the news. This has resulted in a lowering of standards almost across the board. There are a few exceptions. And that's important. It's important not just to journalists. It's important to every American. It's important to the country. Because let's see clearly what journalism as it's supposed to be is. Journalism is the red beating heart of freedom and democracy. The founders of the country realized then, we haven't always operated with that foremost in our minds, but that's true. So when I talk about the diminishment of standards and the trivialization of news, the corporatization, the politicalization, which has led to this lowering of standards, that matters to everybody. I think that's where we are. I do see some glimmers of things getting somewhat better, that I think the experience of the Iraq War and what journalism and journalists, including this one, did and did not do in questioning the roll-up to the Iraq War, made a lot of journalists, including this one, think twice about what we should be doing, what we ought to be doing. I want to make clear that in saying that, I'm not stating a preference of whether we should have gone to war in Iraq or not have gone to war in Iraq, but what we know, and those of us in journalism knew it at the time, and I think a lot of Americans knew it, that the intelligence on which going to war was based, the rationale which we were given for going to war, was faulty. At the very minimum, it wasn't questioned as it should have been, and that's where journalists, mm-hmm. including this one, should have taken the lead, and in too many instances, we didn't.
I think you made these journalism comments before. One that comes to mind was a 2006 presentation in Seattle at McCaw Hill. I think you also mentioned there the consumers need to be smarter consumers of the news. Would you say that still rings true?
Well, I think it's truer today than it was when I said then. It is very true. Don't misunderstand me. My experience is that the audience is a lot smarter than most people in radio, television, and newspapers believe them to be. But now more than ever, you do need to be a smart consumer of news, and this is why. There's so much over the airwaves, in print, on the computer, that passes for news, that poses as news, that is, quote, news, unquote, but is really entertainment. Mm-hmm. And the line between entertainment and news has been so blurred. Entertainment values have virtually overwhelmed news values, that someone said, well, I saw in the news last night something. And when you question, it wasn't a newscast at all. It really was an entertainment program posing as a news program. For example, to get four people in a room shouting at one another about their opinions is something. It's certainly entertainment. You may get some information out of it, but it's not news. News is sending people to the battleground in Afghanistan and Iraq. News is people grabbing a notepad or their computer and getting out of the office to go and talking to people about how deeply the economic downturn has cut. That's news. And by the way, one of my own definitions of news, I wish it were original with me, but it isn't, is that, you know, what people need to know, what's important for people to know, that somebody somewhere, especially somebody in power, doesn't want them to know, that is news. Almost everything else is publicity and propaganda.
Well, with that in mind, what is your thoughts on the current state of the 24/7 news stream and, more importantly, broadcast network nightly news? Where do you see it going?
I wish I could be more optimistic about the evening news, the news that comes at 5:30, 6 or 6:30 in the evening. In many ways, I think it's a dying business. I'll be surprised if the three so-called major networks continue, all three of them continue to do it for very much longer. I hope I'm wrong about that. There are a lot of reasons for it, the fracturing of the audience, the immensely enlarged size of the competitive pit, the Internet, all of those things that go into it. I do believe, because partly it's been my experience and because I get out and talk to people, I think there's a real hunger among a large audience, not everybody, for real news, what I call real hard news. People want to know what's going on. You can find it now. You can find it on the Internet. You can find it on your television set. You certainly can find it in newspapers and magazines. But you have to look harder today to find it than ever before. Because in New York now, I believe I get something like 800 channels, satellite and cable channels, on my television set. And stunningly, night after night, there's very little worth watching on it. Now, if you are careful and you're selective and you take the time, you can find places where there is real hard news. But that's why we need an educated and alert consumer. And I just, you know, softly and gently, I'm not preaching anything here, that the first question to ask when you tune in to a, quote, news program is this news or is this entertainment? And is the purpose a public service to provide information for citizens on which to make decisions, or is its sole purpose to get ratings, get better demographics, and make a profit for someone?
Of those programs that are real hard news, who are the journalists today that you admire?
Well, it's a good question, and I hope for the only time here I'm going to duck.
Gotcha.
and the reason is that if you start making a list, one is certain to bring leave somebody out. So I prefer not to do that. I will say that the Associated Press, which has been a bulwark of real hard news for well over 100 years, continues to be a national treasure as far as I'm concerned. As you know, it's a cooperative of news organizations, the Associated Press serves. But the Associated Press, and one of the things I do admire about them, they cover breaking news, they cover state legislatures, which are increasingly undercovered, vastly undercovered. They cover local news, they cover international news, but they also do deep digging investigative reporting, which has shrunk ghastly over the last 10, 15 years. Not enough of it. And the AP continues to do that.
You mentioned your show, Dan Rather Reports, on HDNet. I noticed one of the blogs on there, how you discovered Facebook. And I'm curious, how have things like Facebook and Twitter changed the way you consume news? Or has it played a factor at all?
Well, as I think is the case with a lot of people, I'm keeping in mind that, you know, we have people in this country who can't afford a computer. We have people who've never had a computer in their home or school or with them. But with people who are computer literate, that Facebook, Twitter, the so-called social media, has changed the way consumers, not only how they get news, but how they view news that they get in other places. And that's been the case with myself, as you alluded to. I was slow to come around to social media. I cover stories. I don't have time to be tweeting people five times an hour. Besides that, I don't think anybody's interested where I got my hamburger today at lunch or some other important news bulletin. But I say that only half jokingly, because I have found that it's another venue, it's another pipeline, if you will, to people who are interested in news. And now, I spend as little time as possible on it, but I do take certain periods of the day to file for Facebook, somewhat less for Twitter, but also on Twitter, because I've become a believer. It's one of the things I intend to talk about tonight, that in this era, the two most important things in any kind of communication, but particularly for news, number one is authenticity, to be authentic. And people have found on Facebook, for example, they can tell in an instant whether the person whose name is on it actually wrote it or whether some agent or publicity hound or something wrote it. So you have to be authentic. And the second is to carry on a conversation. You have to have a conversation with your audience or with your readership. If you're not authentic and you're not carrying on a conversation, then you're not likely to be relevant.
Former CBS Evening News anchor Dan Rather, who was kind enough to share his thoughts on the current state of journalism, among other topics, during a visit to the A&M Commerce campus Tuesday. You can hear the full half-hour interview with Mr. Rather at ketr.org. At age 80, the veteran newsman is still hard at work, currently the lead anchor and managing editor of Dan Rather Reports, which can be seen on cable channel HDNet. You heard us reference it in the interview. He also has a new book coming out entitled Rather Outspoken, My Life in the News, and that releases May 1st. When we come back, we have a Friday feature for you. Don't go away. This is The Lead on your station, 88.9 KETR.
Hey, what's that coming around the bends? That's the sound of Notably Texan, bringing you a brand new, eclectic, hand-picked playlist each night, filled with the music of Texas in all its forms. It's not just one or two styles of music. Notably Texan is as diverse as our great state itself. Join me, Matt Minky, for Notably Texan, tonight at 6, on your station, 88.9 KETR.
Welcome back to The Lead. It's now time for our Friday feature. As social media becomes more integrated into our lives, it is becoming more obvious that job seekers should be careful what they post online. Devin Fulton has the story.
Social media has become the buzz of society today with the ever-growing features of online communication and networking. The days of snail mail and telephone calls are still among us, but they are steadily dropping in popularity to their newer online counterparts. It may come as no surprise that the effects of social media is now stretching far beyond the simple boundaries of individuals' home lives, but also into the corporate world of business. College students of today are having to focus on building a well-polished online presence in order to make the best mark they can on the workforce once they graduate. Career Development Representative Gregory Shirley knows that this turn of events is providing a new way that job seekers can reflect themselves to potential employers.
We used to be so used to going to job fairs and going on interviews, but now we need to be very cognizant about updating our statuses, keeping our profiles up to date on these different sites, and always making sure that we put ourselves in the most positive light as possible in these different areas.
Students from the campus of Texas A&M Commerce are learning firsthand how much freedom potential employers have when it comes to researching their identity online.
I feel like I've cleaned my Facebook up enough, but you never know, like, what's on the internet. It's always on the internet. You can always find something that could hurt you on down the road.
Others are more optimistic when it comes to what they post.
I don't feel like I really have anything to hide, so I'm not really overly worried about it.
Joshua Waldman, the author of For Dummies' book, Seven Mistakes Job Seekers Make Online, focuses on the reality that we live in a very technological time, and employers are taking advantage of every social media platform.
Statistics are showing that 95% or more of hiring managers and recruiters are using social media to find new talent. So whether or not they use it to discover you, even after you apply to a job, they're going to check you out on Google. They're going to see if you're doing funny things on Facebook. You are going to be searched. And so we need to start managing that rather than letting that manage us.
As the phenomenon of social media continues to work its way into the real-world society, job seekers must take every opportunity to implement these services to shed a light on their potential as an employee. I'm Devin Fulton with an insight from the interwebs, only on your station, 88.9 KETR.
Thank you, Devin. Appreciate all the great features we've had so far from our spring 2012 intern class, and we will hear much more from them in the weeks ahead. Our Friday feature airs each Friday during the lead at 10 a.m. and again at 4:45 p.m. during All Things Considered. And you have a story idea for us? We'd love to hear it. Tell us about it by emailing me, scott@ketr.org. That's S-C-O-T-T @ketr.org. When we come back, we'll wrap things up here on the program. This is your station, 88.9 KETR.
Do you miss the days when radio would actually tell you a story?
Good evening, radio listening audience. I'm Gary Wallace.
Written by Otrova Gomez, The Scorpion's Honey is a collection of short stories that are fascinating, thought-provoking, and sometimes very strange.
Sit back and see how an alter ego can totally change what could have been an ordinary life.
The Scorpion's Honey airs at 7 p.m. on Saturdays right after A Prairie Home Companion on your station, 88.9 KETR.
Welcome back to The Lead. It's now time to check out the events calendar for Northeast Texas. It includes Audie Murphy Days, and that's going to be taking place at a couple of different locations over in Greenville at the Audie Murphy American Cop Museum and also at the Fletcher Warren Civic Center. It takes place Friday and Saturday. It's a two-day event that honors the life of Audie Murphy and all military. Events will consist of speakers, music, displays, and demonstrators. Noted speakers include retired UT pilot Lieutenant Colonel Greg Barber, actor Michael Dante, and retired Sergeant R.V. Bergen. Again, that's taking place at the Audie Murphy American Cop Museum and Fletcher Warren Civic Center in Greenville. Audie Murphy Days, Friday and Saturday in Greenville. The big event in Commerce, a lot of people are familiar with this activity as well, the annual springtime cleanup event. People from out throughout the community, as well as individuals from Texas A&M University Commerce, will take part in a citywide cleanup event. There'll be projects all over town. And individuals that don't have an assigned project, I believe if you want to meet over at City Park, you can be assigned one. Plenty of work to go around for the springtime cleanup event that also includes a free paper shredding event that takes place over at the Farmers Market, which is on Bonham Street. Ladonia's Responsible Pet Ownership Day, a new activity going over in downtown. It's taking place from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. It's to provide animal owners in Ladonia and the surrounding communities. And they name a number of communities here, including but not limited to Pecan Gap, Honey Grove, Bonham, and Dodge City. This will include low-cost vaccines, microchips, and heartworm testing provided by Cause for Paws. So a good activity that takes place from 10 until 2 from downtown Ladonia, the Responsible Pet Ownership Day. That's Saturday. And one more for you, but there's more on our calendar, Boots and Barbecue. It's the Commerce Educational Enrichment Foundation, the fundraiser. It's taking place at the Commerce High School, and that's from 6 until 9 Saturday evening. The school's Educational Enrichment hosts this annual fundraiser to celebrate projects and accomplishments this year by grant awardees and also raises funds for next year's grants. Foundation donors have given over $200,000 since 2005 to fund academic endeavors in math, science, technology, and the fine arts. So the Boots and Barbecue fundraiser over at the Commerce High School Saturday evening from 6 until 9. That's going to do it for today's installment of The Lead. I want to thank my guest, noted journalist and renowned speaker and former CBS Evening News anchor Dan Rather, who was on the Texas A&M University Commerce campus this week to give an address on the economy, but also made time for us here at KETR and give reflections of his more than 60 years in the industry. Excellent opportunity there, and great to speak with him. The full interview is at our website, ketr.org. And we hope you enjoyed our Friday feature from Devin Fulton on the social media world and how it can get you into trouble if you're not careful what you're posting. We're back same time next Friday at 9 a.m., and our show re-airs at 10 a.m. 9 a.m. on Saturdays. Remember, you can hear archives of the show at ketr.org. Texas Matters is up next.